Good morning, and welcome to the Toll Brothers second quarter 2018 earnings conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Douglas Yearley, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Laura. Welcome and thank you for joining us. I'm Doug Yearley, CEO. With me today are Bob Toll, Executive Chairman, Rick Hartman, President, COO, Marty Connor, Chief Financial Officer, Fred Cooper, Senior VP of Finance and Investor Relations, Kira Sterling, Chief Marketing Officer, Mike Snyder, Chief Planning Officer, Greg Ziegler, Senior VP and Treasurer, and Don Salmon, President of PBI Mortgage Company. Before I begin, I ask you to read the statement on forward-looking information in today's release and on our website. I caution you that many statements on this call are forward-looking based on assumptions about the economy, world events, housing and financial markets, and many other factors beyond our control that could significantly affect future results. Those listening on the web can email questions to rtoll@tollbrothers.com. We completed fiscal year 2018's second quarter on April 30th. Our double-digit dollar growth in revenues, contracts, and backlog reflects the health of the luxury new home market. We had another solid spring selling season. The value of second quarter signed contracts, the highest quarter in our history, rose 18% in dollars on a 6% increase in units. On a same-store basis, signed contracts of 9.04 per community were up 16% from last year and the highest for a second quarter since 2005. This was our eighth consecutive quarter of year-over-year same-store contract growth. Based on our second quarter results and feedback from our sales teams around the country, it does not appear that the rise in mortgage rates has had a negative impact on our business. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage is still only at 4.87%, which is up about 75 basis points in the past year. We have also not seen any impact from SALT, the changes to the state and local tax deduction, on our sales. California, where SALT would be felt the most, was particularly strong this quarter. For example, in Northern California, Metro Crossing in Fremont has sold 136 homes since opening 3.5 months ago at an average price of $1.2 million. In Southern California, Altair, located in Irvine, has sold 78 homes since February at an average price of $2.5 million. I also want to highlight some other markets where we have seen strong sales. In Boise, a market that may be perceived as more interest rate sensitive, we continue to sell very well. For the second quarter, we took 14.5 contracts per community and ended the quarter with 354 homes in backlog. Our acquisition of Coleman Homes there continues to exceed our expectations. Active adult continues to sell well in both the Western markets such as Reno and Las Vegas and in the East. For example, out west at Regency at the Monte Ranch in Reno, we have sold 35 units since February. And in the East at Regency at Kimberton Glen, located outside of Philadelphia, we have taken 36 agreements also since February. At Coastal Oaks, which is a master plan community in Jacksonville, Florida, we have sold 42 homes since February. I am proud of our performance this quarter considering our reduced community count and the difficult comp to last spring. In 2017, our second quarter contracts were up 23% in dollars and 26% in units from the prior year, and we had 12% more communities last year than this year. Nonetheless, as I mentioned, This quarter, we had the highest dollar value of contracts for any quarter in our company's history. We project third quarter end community count to be approximately 290, down from 312 at last year's third quarter end, but up from 283 at 2018's second quarter end. With 75 planned new community openings in the back half of fiscal year 2018, we project to end fiscal 18 with approximately 315 communities compared to 305 at fiscal year end 2017. And without giving specific guidance on community count for fiscal year 2019, we already own or control enough communities we plan to open next fiscal year to project growth in community count, and that is before potential new land acquisitions in the pipeline. Turning to revenues, we saw a 17% rise this quarter with increases in every region. California revenues rose 17% and was our largest region, producing 27% of total revenues. The North was up 19%, the Mid-Atlantic was up 13%, the South was up 23%, the West was up 15%, and City Living was up 17%. California and the Western region combined produced nearly 50% of total revenues, reflecting the strategic diversification of the company's operations over the past decade. With our $6.36 billion backlog, we believe fiscal year 2018 will be a year of significant revenue growth. Based on this backlog, a projected increase in community count, the quality of our brand and land portfolio, the financial strength of the affluent home buyer, and the breadth of demographic segments we serve, we believe fiscal year 2019 will be another year of growth as well. Now let me turn it over to Marty.
Thanks, Doug. Before I address the specifics of this quarter, I do want to note that a reconciliation of the non-GAAP measures referenced during today's discussion to their comparable GAAP measures can be found in the back of today's release. We are pleased with our second quarter results. We exceeded the midpoint of our guidance for revenues, units delivered, and average delivered price, and we exceeded our specific guidance for SG&A, JV and other income, and our tax rate. Adjusted gross margin came in a bit lower than the guidance for three main reasons. First, we had some delayed high-margin California closings, which we expect to shift into the third quarter. Second, we saw the impact of labor and material cost pressures. And the third reason was attributable to our strategy of reducing standing inventory in some of our finished condo projects in New York City. Related to that, we have made meaningful progress in our previously announced initiative to sell out the remaining inventory in some of our completed condo buildings in New York City. To date, we have sold approximately 48% of the units and 43% of the dollar value of the wholly owned inventory we began this fiscal year with. This is a returns-focused initiative that has some short-term impact on margins, but will generate significant cash that we can reinvest in better opportunities. For the full year, we reaffirm our adjusted gross margin guidance at 23.75% to 24.25% of revenues, but acknowledge the challenges associated with labor and material cost inflation. On the other hand, California, which is a higher margin business, is becoming a larger percentage of deliveries. In Q2, it was 27% of revenues. We expect that to grow steadily through the balance of the year to the mid to low 30s% of revenue. It's also important to note that all product types and all regions are projected to show margin improvement in Q3 and Q4. Consistent with our focus on return on equity and driving shareholder value, over the last few years, we have been reducing the number of years of land we own on balance sheet. It is now below 4 years based on the midpoint of fiscal year 2018's projected deliveries. We will continue to focus on increasing the percentage of land we control through options in order to improve our return on equity. Also related to return on equity, to date, we have repurchased $291 million worth of our stock since the beginning of the fiscal year and reiterate our soft target of $400 million for the full year. Finally, in April, we increased our quarterly dividend from 8 cents to 11 cents per share. This returns the dividend yield to approximately 1% of our share price. Our apartment business continues to grow. We now control a pipeline of approximately 16,000 units in projects completed, in construction, under development, or in approvals. We are expanding this operation beyond our Metro Boston to Washington, D.C. base and now have teams in San Fran, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Dallas, and Phoenix. Turning to guidance for the third quarter and the balance of the fiscal year, and subject to our normal forward-looking statement caveats, we offer the following guidance. We are increasing the midpoint of our full-year delivery guidance by 50 units and $5,000 in average delivered price. That is approximately an $80 million increase to the midpoint of our revenue guidance for full fiscal year 2018. We now expect full-year deliveries to be between 8,000 and 8,500 units at an average price between $830,000 and $860,000. For the third quarter, we expect deliveries between 2,100 and 2,200 units at an average price of between $830,000 and $850,000. We reaffirm our adjusted gross margin guidance for the full fiscal year of 23.75% to 24.25% of revenues, with the third quarter estimated to be around 23.4%. We reaffirm our fiscal year SG&A guidance of 10% of revenues, with a rate of 9.6% expected in the third quarter. We revised the range for our fiscal year JV and other income guidance down slightly to $130 million to $160 million and expect approximately $20 million of this to be in the third quarter. Our effective tax rate guidance is reaffirmed at 23 to 25% for the year, and our expectation for the third quarter is 27.5%. of pre-tax income. As Doug noted, we project a slight increase in third quarter end community count compared to second quarter end, but our projected third quarter end community count is down about 7% from a year earlier. We project a fiscal year end 2018 community count of approximately 315 compared to 305 a year earlier. Now let me turn it over to Bob.
Thanks, Marty. Jobs are plentiful, unemployment is low, wages are rising, and existing home price appreciation is providing the equity for customers to buy new homes. Home ownership and household formation rates are increasing while supply remains very constrained. With our solid land positions and the capital to expand, we are gaining market share and look forward to continued growth. Now, back to you, Doug.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Marty. Laura, we're ready for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. And our first question today will come from John Lovallo of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hey guys, thank you for taking my question. The first question is the third quarter gross margin, adjusted gross margin target of 23.4%. You know, would imply, I think, down about 160 basis points year over year, despite some benefit from those delayed California closings that you mentioned. What are the kind of the big drivers of that outside of maybe labor?
I think the biggest driver is just a function of mix, John. But as we've mentioned, Q3 and Q4 of 18 are going to be improved over Q2 here. So things are going in the right direction.
Okay, and then maybe just on the labor comments that you guys made, you know, it seems that you do utilize a slightly different labor base than most of the other public home builders, and your competition is more kind of the local guys. I mean, what is driving, in your view, kind of the increases in labor? Is it just a lack of availability of workers, or, you know, what's going on there?
John, first, I don't think we use a different trade base than the other builders, with the exception of maybe some finished trades that are a little more custom and capable of finishing our homes to, you know, the higher standard that we demand and our client demands. But we're all, as an industry, in this together. And, you know, as we've all talked about, labor is tight. It's a combination of, I'd say, you know, probably 20 or 30% labor, and the balance right now being materials, number one of which, of course, is, you know, lumber is up significantly. But it's really across the board with, you know, the labor force, and then, as I mentioned, a couple of different pretty significant materials, primarily lumber, that go into the home. But we're all on this together. I really don't think there's a difference for Toll Brothers versus the other builders.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
The next question will come from Dan Oppenheim of UBS.
Thanks very much. Just wanted to ask about that in terms of the California delays. You talked about the percentage of revenue getting to the 30s later in the year, and just it seems as though that might mean that some delays persist a little bit longer. Just trying to just get a little bit more color on that in terms of how you're thinking about backlog conversion for the third quarter and sort of the overall mix there.
Yeah, Dan, I don't think the delays we're seeing are anything out of the ordinary. It's the typical. There have been some construction delays due to some labor issues. We have some buyers that, you know, request the delay. Our houses are big and very complicated, and as you know, in California, our price point is higher, which means the houses are bigger and have more options. It's something we're managing. It's something we're very focused on, and I'm confident that the situation will improve. But it's nothing that causes me great alarm. We've all been doing this a long time, and you know, we can bucket these delays into the normal categories, some of which I just mentioned. And we're going to do our best to manage it, but I would not be alarmed that, you know, this problem is going to increase or continue to the extent we just saw.
And just for the rough order of magnitude, Dan, we're talking 15 homes, and they have that much of an impact on our margin because of the price point of those homes and the fact that their margin is 5 to 7% higher than our average.
Right.
Right, and I guess, but so for backlog conversion for the second half of the year, should we expect that to be similar to what it was in the second half of 17, or continue at sort of a lower level relative to 17 as it was in the second quarter?
I think in the guidance we've outlined, we've taken into consideration the volume of business in California and the situation we just encountered here in the second quarter. So I think you're looking at a backlog conversion of 30% for the next quarter.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Dennis McGill of Zelman & Associates.
Hi, good morning, guys. First question on the gross margin comments Marty had. Can you maybe segment the three items you mentioned as far as order of magnitude, which was more impactful? And then related to that, with the discounting that you're doing in New York City to clear the inventory, the fact that you're holding guidance for the full year, does that mean you're making up for that somewhere else, or that you're sliding just to the lower end of that versus what you might have thought before?
I think our success in California is offsetting our success in New York City with respect to that strategy. So I think from that perspective, you could say we're making up for it. As it relates to the three components, they were second quarter issues, and they were equally weighted, around 10 to 15 points each. California delays, New York City success in inventory clearance, and cost creep from labor and materials.
Okay, great. And then second question, with the success that you're guiding to with respect to getting more communities open and the strong absorptions you're seeing today, would you anticipate that there's any trade-off between absorptions and community count as you go forward, or either from mix or from how you're going to price the product?
No.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And next we have a question from Paul Brzezbilski of Wells Fargo.
Actually, this is Steven. Hey, guys. Quick question. The gross margin broke below 20% this quarter. I know that's temporary, but long-term it's come down. So I guess a couple of different things, one short-term and one long-term. Your guidance for 4Q implies you're going to be meaningfully up and up year over year. Is that the inflection point when we're looking short-term as far as year over year comparisons? And then, Doug, as you look at longer-term, you know, it's down from where you all have historically been. You've got a lot of product mix and geography mix that's changed. You're pushing your land to more options, et cetera. But I guess if you could just help us out how you all think about the business today versus maybe you thought about it, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago from a gross margin perspective.
Steven, I guess I'm a little confused by your reference to an inflection point in the fourth quarter. That will obviously be the high point of our margin for this quarter, for this year, as it benefits from California becoming an increasingly large percentage of our total deliveries.
I'm sorry.
On margins for 19 yet.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just talking about on a year-over-year basis, Marty, where the first three quarters are down, and it looks like, you know, as you go through the numbers, potentially, you know, including capitalized interest, that it looks like maybe fourth quarter would be up. So just wondered if that was, you know, if you sort of anniversaried all of the decline in the gross margin.
I think that's certainly the case for the fourth quarter. And we'll give 19 margin guidance at a later date.
Okay, fair enough.
And, Stephen, with respect to your broader question about whether we look at the business differently today with respect to gross margin and ROE and other, you know, other metrics compared to 10 or 15 years ago, the answer is no. We are very proud of our margins. They are among the highest in the industry. We have also, as you know, worked very hard in the last couple of years to improve ROE, and we've I'm very proud of the results that are paying off on the ROE. I think you'll continue to see that improve as we continue to do the things Marty mentioned, which is option more land, be more creative in land buying, move opportunities off balance sheet where appropriate. Buy back stock, issue dividends, and you know we're very focused on enhancing shareholder value through improving the ROE. But we're most focused on driving earnings, and we will continue to work hard to buy the best land. We raise price when we can. California right now has significant pricing power, but we are also sensitive to making sure that we move through, you know, the land that we have. And that, of course, is an ROE focus. So for us, it's a balance. It is no different from what we did in prior cycles. Obviously, in prior recoveries, there was more pricing power. So ROEs were naturally improving because those with land were rewarded. And this recovery has been a bit different, where there has not been as much pricing power. And so we have focused more and more on other levers that we must pull to improve the ROE. But you will continue to see us balance margin with ROE.
Gotcha. Then that's really helpful. Thanks, Doug. And then on multifamily, you all have really started to, or you've been accelerating that business, if you will. I guess, can you just give us a little more view about what's happening, what's going on there? You know, to me, as we look at markets, we see, you know, a lot of inventory in the central business district with towers, et cetera, but we don't see much inventory at all as you start to move away from that and more, you know, mid-rise, low-rise, that type of thing. So just trying to understand how you all are looking at that business and what you expect going forward from it.
Stephen, we're very excited by our apartment business. As we stated today, we now have over 16,000 units in various stages of entitlement, development, or lease up or stabilization. We have expanded the business beyond our core market of Washington, D.C. to Boston. We now have teams in major cities around the country. It is a blend of suburban garden apartment, infill mid-rise, and city high-rise. And that applies not just to the East, but in the newer markets that we've mentioned that we've entered. Our team is performing very well. We have a strategy of doing all of this off balance sheet. It has a very high return on investment, return on equity, and we have a strategy generally, for every three we build and stabilize, we will sell one and hold two. So we will return earnings to our shareholders regularly, and as that business grows, obviously there's more threes, so there's more one that we sell, but we will also be building a longer-term portfolio, and we think that's a good balance, and we're really excited about where that business is headed, and I think you're going to see terrific growth and strong earnings coming out of it.
Doug, could I ask you quickly on that? You're at 16,000 now. As you look out, you know, maybe over 3 years or something like that, you know, what would you all be comfortable taking this business?
It's in the early stages right now. It's only for us about 4 or 5 years old. So I would be very comfortable with this business doubling. I think there are plenty of opportunities in the markets we're now in, plus many more markets that we haven't even begun to enter or even begun to look at. This year alone, we have, Greg, how many properties that will be under construction this year? Hold on. We have 2,300-plus units that will be in construction this year. Average size is 300 to 350, so, you know, call that 8 or 9, you know, new properties this year alone that are going up.
And remember, Stephen, gotcha, this business has a tendency to recycle capital so that you can build the next building with money from the last building through the refinancing or sell-down process. So our capital investment in this is approximately $250 million right now, maybe $300 million, and that's with maybe a dozen projects we haven't found partners for yet. So that would go down when we get the partners' money to buy 75%. So we're really excited about the capital efficiency of this business.
All right. That is hugely helpful. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And the next question comes from Susan McClary of Credit Suisse.
Hi, this is actually Chris on for Susan. Thanks for taking our questions. It looks like you're expecting a pretty significant ramp-up in community count in the back half of the year. Is there any risk that some of those communities get pushed back into 2019 given the labor constraints we're seeing out there? And can you just give us a better sense of, like the location and overall profile of these communities?
Sure. I'll answer the second part first. The communities are really spread around the country. We've got a whole bunch, 16 of the 75 in Pennsylvania, but then we have and 5 in New Jersey. We have 10 in Nevada, 5 in Southern California, 8 in Boise. But again, that those numbers I gave you probably adds up to a third of the total. So it's really widespread in most of our markets nationwide. With respect to labor and whether there's a risk of the communities getting pushed out, there's always the risk of some communities being pushed out. It's not because of labor. We certainly have the land development crews to get, in most cases, get the roads in, get the community ready to be opened. It's more about the permitting. The permitting process in almost all of our markets is complicated. It's tedious. It takes time. There can be 20, 30 permits associated with a full land approval. And, you know, that final permit you need from the county soil conservation district to give you the green light to go, which our team may believe is coming in June, and it comes in July or August, can lead to a community being pushed out. But we're good at it. We've hedged a bit in terms of, you know, the projections we've given, because we know historically that everyone we think may open will not. So I am comfortable with the guidance we've given, and I think we're in good shape.
Got it. Thanks for that. And then could you just talk more on the regional differences you're seeing in California? You know, are there any specific areas that are driving the strength there? And, you know, how are you guys approaching the pace of land acquisition in that state?
So we are in what I'll call the best locations of Southern Cal, L.A., and the best locations of Northern Cal, San Francisco. Both markets and the sub-markets around those two cities are performing very well. Down south, I'd say Orange County is the best sub-market. And up north, we have more activity in the East Bay than the South Bay. But they are both very, very strong. With respect to land acquisition, we're active. We've seen some very interesting and exciting deals in the last quarter. It's very competitive. Land is obviously very expensive in California. We put a lot of diligence and thought into everything we do out there. But based on the deal flow that I am seeing, I think you'll continue to see strong results and good growth out west, out in California.
Thanks. That's very helpful.
The next question comes from Michael Rehaut of J.P. Morgan.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. First question, don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I think it's the, you know, big focus on the results today. You know, understanding the gross margins a little bit. You know, Marty, you highlighted, you know, labor and materials as being one of the drivers a little bit to the downside here. You know, I think most other builders have, you know, also cited, you know, labor and materials as a continued source of inflation, but perhaps with an ability to, you know, at minimum offset those pressures, you know, through price. Was curious, you know, given the solid pace that you've had, and there's always a balance of pace versus price, if you feel that at this point you're able to fully offset it. Obviously, you talk to most of your areas right now continue to have very strong demand, and you highlighted California not being impacted by rates or salt. So just thoughts around, you know, your ability to, you know, offset labor materials going forward.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the focus of the question. And I think, you know, we've said that we expect margin improvement in every product line and in every region in the third and in the fourth quarter. The most impactful of those regions is California because of its already high gross margins and it becoming a larger percent of total business. So every community stands on its own, and we are able to achieve price increases in some that offset the cost increases. In others, it's not able to be done. But overall, we're looking at improved margins for the third quarter and the fourth quarter.
The pricing of our units is not based on cost. Neither should it be for any other builder. We try and get as much as we can. And we try and get that not tied to cost, but tied to demand that we feel in the market. So the offset feature of the increase in prices is really not there. When you see these prices going up, it's because we have greater demand.
Right. No, I understand. I appreciate that. I mean, just kind of following on that in terms of pricing power, do you have a sense of the percent or rough percent of communities that you were able to raise prices this past quarter and you know, the you know, rough amount and it might, how that might compare to the prior quarter?
I do not have that, Mike.
Okay. Just one last one, you know, coming back to a question on apartment, the apartment business and the growth there. And, Doug, you said that you could see that potentially doubling over the next few years. You know, I was hoping to just get a kind of a brief recap of how you see that business from a returns standpoint relative to your core business. I mean, you have another, you know, one of your large competitors that's ventured into the apartment business as well. And, you know, I think over time is looking to, you know, looking at options along with some of its other ancillary businesses to refocus on the core home building operation. It seems like you're looking to, you know, kind of build this out over time. And, you know, could we see it getting to, you know, a bigger percentage of pre-tax income over the next 3 to 5 years?
Sure, Mike. With respect to returns from this business, the projects themselves are underwritten to an upper teens, low 20s returns. And with our promote, we add maybe 5 percentage points in our expectations to what we hope to achieve. With respect to the size of the business and its contribution to income, last year, it contributed around $25 million to our pre-tax bottom line. And this year, we expect that to double. A lot of that is impacted by the pace and amount of gains on dispositions or sell downs of our interests. And so at this point, we have not fully baked what we expect for 2019, but we are intending to grow this business such that these sales of buildings get a little bit more routine than they are right now.
And, Mike, I will add that the multifamily team runs independently. It has its own land teams. It has its own construction teams. It has its own management and leasing teams. I don't think at all are we distracted or not focused on the core business. We don't have land acquisition managers that are bouncing between multifamily opportunities and for sale. Occasionally they may overlap because there may be a property that could be suitable for either. And then we in here get to make that decision. But I'm very proud and happy with how the apartment living group is running, and I'm very proud of how the home building team is running, and I believe longer term we can continue to build both businesses efficiently and effectively.
Great. Thanks a lot.
And our next question comes from Megan McGrath of MKM Partners.
Thanks. Good morning. I wanted to circle back to order growth in the quarter. Obviously, some mixed results from a net perspective. But can you talk us through, were any regions down year over year on an absorption pace growth perspective, or was it all the declines due to community count declines?
Megan, the the only reason an area may be down would be because of community count being down. On a same store basis, on the number of sales per community for the quarter, the divisions were up.
Great, thank you. And maybe a bit of a longer term follow up on California. Given that it's contributing so much to your revenue and gross margin growth, if I think about, you talked about a little bit about the land acquisition pipeline. If you look at your land holdings there now and your community count plans, will it represent as much or more in your view in the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months than it is now, or are we seeing some kind of sort of short-term peak in the California representation?
Hold on. Let's get the numbers for you, Greg.
Sorry. And, she wants it on revenue or on land holdings?
Communities.
Oh, communities. Oh, sorry.
So Greg is putting in front of me the numbers on community count throughout the year. We started fiscal 17 with 38 selling communities in
fiscal
18. I have year end 17. So
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so you're halfway.
One day later. So we ended fiscal 17 with 38 selling communities in California, and we project to end fiscal 18 with 39. Plus one.
Okay. And looking further out, I mean, I guess my question really is, Doug, like, how is this? Are you comfortable with this level of contribution from California? Would you like it to get bigger? Is there a point at which you would be uncomfortable that it would be contributing so much to your revenue base?
So with respect to 19, we're not going to give specifics on community count or community location. Except for my general comment when we started the call that right now we have owned and controlled land in place to grow community count in 19, and that, of course, is before we continue to see deal flow, and we have, the deals in the pipeline that should add to that.
And we have five different markets in California, Northern Cal in San Francisco and Sacramento, Southern Cal, San Diego and Los Angeles,
right,
and a little bit in Palm Springs.
Yeah, Palm Springs and Sacramento are very, very small. Our business is driven by
those
San Francisco, LA, and the northern side of San Diego.
Right.
I'm comfortable with our size right now in California, and based on the deal flow that I see, the land that we're working on, I'm hopeful that we can sustain it at this level.
Great, thank you.
You're very welcome, thank you.
And the next question comes from Nishu Sood of Deutsche Bank.
Hey, thanks. This is actually Tim Daly on for Nishu. So the first question is on the lowered outlook for community count growth this year. It doesn't seem like early closeouts were the driver, as volumes came in line with your expectations, and it doesn't really seem like it was community delays, as kind of the gross number of openings planned in the second half of the year actually went up. So if you could just help us reconcile the moving pieces behind the revision, that would be super helpful.
Sure. A small part of it is sellout. We've had, excellent sales, and so a few more communities have sold out faster than we anticipated. So that is certainly part of it. And the 75 communities that will be opening in the second half, some of that is because we thought they may open in Q2, and now they're being pushed to Q3. So it is a bit back-end loaded, not so much because we ran out and found new land, but because the timing of the entitlements, as I mentioned earlier, is not always perfectly predictable. And if we lose a month or two or three, we can have a community get pushed out. So that's really what is driving it.
Appreciate the color there. So I guess second question then, if we're thinking about kind of the changes in the community count trajectory, and as well it seems like there might have been some a bit more intensity put on the closeouts of the standing inventory and the condo projects in New York. So if we're just thinking about kind of the operating cash flow expectations for the year, what kind of level are you guys anticipating? Obviously, 17 was very impressive. So just if you could help us, I guess, understand that.
Sure. So, and this is these are figures after land purchases and improvements, and not reflecting any debt raises in excess of debt paydowns. So we think it's somewhere between $250 to $350 million.
Great. Thank you for the questions.
You're welcome.
And next, we have a question from Stephen Kim of Evercore ISI.
Hey, guys. It's actually Trey on for Steve. The first question is touching on the New York City apartments. How much generally did you cut your margin expectations for those units that you're trying to push through? And do you expect to be through those by the end of this year, or do you think they could linger a bit into 19?
So I think there is a potential for some of them to linger into next year because our appetite for margin reduction is not unlimited. So we set expectations at the beginning of the year for margins in the mid to upper 20s. This quarter came in a bit below that, but we're still comfortable with that amount for the full year.
And I will mention that we have a number of buildings that are under construction and actively selling where we don't, this is not the inventory issue we've been talking about, that are doing very well. At $2,000 a foot in New York City, in the locations where we build, the market is healthy. We're seeing very strong sales. We're also seeing very strong sales in Jersey City. We talked about the building over at Provo Square now for the last year, and that building will begin delivering in the fourth quarter. So the focus that we've talked about on this call has been with the lingering remaining units in buildings that are completed and occupied. Some of those units are small, and there's a few of those units that are large and very expensive. And it's the larger, more expensive units that we have had to discount more because the upper end of the New York market is where there has been more issues. And we, for example, we moved one very expensive unit out in the second quarter, and that unit required discounting to be sold. And thankfully, we only have a couple of remaining large units in New York that we're hoping to work through over the next 6 months.
Okay, that's helpful. And then second, turning back a bit to labor, which you cited as an issue, but you guys also have toll integrated systems to help kind of offset some of those labor challenges. And I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about what you're doing at TIS to maximize the access of labor that you do have.
Yeah, so TIS is our panel and truss operation. We have four panel and truss plants that serve the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Midwest. And it solves a lot of labor because when wall panels and roof trusses are built in our factories, you have framers on site for a week instead of 2.5 weeks because the obviously panels and trusses arrive and they just get erected. And our labor force in those plants is solid, it's secure, it's been with us for many years, and that has certainly helped us in those markets I mentioned because we have the plants.
Okay, our next question will come from Jack Misenko of SIG.
Hi, good morning. The last couple of years, it looks like G&A has levered couple hundred basis points between the 2Q into the 4Q. And this year the guidance is a lot less, obviously opening a lot of communities. Is that part conservatism? Is it all the community openings? Just trying to understand that. And then the apartment personnel and teams you've added, I believe that flows to the JV line, so that's not a driver of I'm just trying to figure out if you know, as a company you're reaching terminal velocity on your G&A leverage, or if there's more to go beyond the community openings in the back half.
So on the G&A leverage, I think we reiterated our guidance. That is a 50 basis point improvement from the year prior, and we think there's room in the future as well, but we're not going to get into that at this point, Jack.
Okay. And then, Marty, on the buyback, I guess if you like it at 45, you love it at 40. How soft is that soft target of the $400 million? And I guess at a higher level question, you know, is growth or ROE the bigger focus?
So it's tough to answer that equation without a focus on what's in the land pipeline, what's in the debt maturity pipeline, and what's in the M&A pipeline, and what's in all the opportunities pipeline. So I think, you know, we gave you a soft target in our commentary, and ironically, the dollar price of the stock is not all that meaningful to the return on equity. It helps the earnings per share a little bit, but $100 million out of equity is $100 million out of equity, whether
okay.
You divide it by $45 or $40.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Jade Rahmani of KBW.
Good morning. This is actually Ryan Tomasello on for Jade. Just firstly, in terms of demand, are you seeing any noticeable impact in your buyer segments from either the rise in rates or declining affordability from the strong HPA we've seen?
House price appreciation.
HPA. Yeah, in my prepared remarks when we started, I talked about rates. They have not impacted our business. I look at the second quarter results. Our sales teams around the country have had nothing to say and have had no issues. So on the rate side, you know, a 4.87% rate, as I mentioned, is still a low rate and is only 75 basis points up from a year ago. So right now we're very comfortable with our business and no issues out there. Home price appreciation, it has also not, been a factor, except we sell move-up homes generally, which means people looking to move up have more value in their existing home, more equity, and appear to be more interested to move up to our houses.
Okay, thanks for that color. And then just in terms of the impairments in the quarter, can you give us some more detail on what drove that, and did any of that relate to the New York City condos you spoke about?
It did not. Go ahead, Marty.
There was one community in Connecticut in particular that drove the majority of that impairment. It's approximately $12 million. It was a bit of a returns-focused change in strategy. We had slowly been working through this for a number of years, but now we acknowledge that the right course of action is to accelerate sales and recoup our investment as soon as possible so the proceeds can go elsewhere.
Great, thanks.
And next we have a question from Jay McCanless of Wedbush Securities.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. The first question I had on the entitlement, I mean, it sounds like that's your biggest headwind when it comes to the reduction in the community growth guidance. Do you foresee this getting better as we move through the rest of the year, or is it still the municipalities just don't have enough people to get the permitting done timely?
Jay, it hasn't changed much, so I don't think it's going to get worse, and I I don't think it's going to necessarily get better. We build in a lot of, you know, tough places. The corner of Main and Main, in the best towns in our markets, are generally difficult places to build, and there's a lot of permitting, and we're good at it, and we're in the middle of it. It takes time. Most of the time, we hit it right on, but occasionally we have a little bit of slippage. It's not about how busy a municipality or a county or a state is. It's just the complication of the permits. And so we fight the fight every day. As I said, we have hedged our number a bit to you for this year because we have historic data, and we know that every community that our teams tell us will open will not, but most will. And going forward, based on the deal flow we have, the land we have secured, I'm very confident that we will continue to have community count growth.
Thanks. And then the second question, looking at the slowdown in the West from almost 40% order growth in the first quarter to negative 6% this quarter, and then the continued soft results in the Mid-Atlantic and the North segments, was there any weather impact this quarter, or was it all community-driven?
It was community count decline in the West. It was not weather-related.
In the North and the Mid-Atlantic, it's similar.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thanks for taking my questions.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The next question will come from Matthew Bouley of Barclays.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I just wanted to follow up on the California gross margins and kind of the longer term trajectory there. You're calling for the sequential improvement this year. I think in the past you had called out an expectation for a year-on-year decline in California for the full year of 2018. So the question is just kind of how are you thinking about the sustainability of those California gross margins, that, you know, that premium versus the rest of the business beyond the next quarter or two? Thank you.
So margins in California prior to this year were benefited by a rapidly appreciating environment and some land purchases at a very early time in the cycle. We are at the low point right now of our margin in California compared to Q3 and Q4. We've been encouraged by what we see out there as it relates to 2018 fiscal year end and the pricing power we have looking forward.
Okay, understood. Thank you for that. And then also following up on the City Living gross margin side, you know, kind of beyond the efforts you're making here on clearing inventory in New York, you know, and also really thinking beyond the next two quarters. So if you could kind of comment on where you think at this point, you know, what a more normalized gross margin will look like in the City Living business. Thank you.
We underwrite those buildings to a mid-30s gross margin. Maybe a little higher over in Manhattan and a little lower on the Jersey side. We have a building delivering in the fourth quarter and through the first three quarters of 19 that is hitting those in the Jersey City side. And that will be pretty much the dominant piece of volume coming out of New York on balance sheet for next year.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question will come from Ken Zener of KeyBank.
Good morning, all.
Good morning, Ken.
Given where community counts are and obviously the back half ramp, I'm wondering if you could talk to the impact on SG&A, specifically kind of, I guess, the fixed component of that, you know, how that might look. And obviously, with higher closings, better fixed cost is absorption. But could you kind of talk to that cadence if a little bit? Thank you.
Sure. So the gross margin guidance for Q Q3 is better than Q2, despite an increase
for SG&A specifically.
I'm sorry?
For SG&A,
I'm
not
sorry,
the gross margin.
SG&A, excuse me. For SG&A, again, we expect revenue volume to create efficiencies despite a little more G&A associated with community account openings. So it should trend down in the third quarter,
okay,
and even more in the fourth quarter. We would expect
right, and seems-
continue to leverage G&A in future years below the 10% guidance that we set for this year.
Okay, good. And then I hear, I'm not asking about gross margin guidance. I think you've been, you've explored that enough. I'm interested more just the kind of the process, because you guys have larger homes, longer build times, how might you be controlling those costs for lumber, for example? You know, I know some builders reprice those bids, you know, with the trade and distributors, you know, every 30 days. Is there a way to kind of think about how you, with your longer build time, might address those front-end cost changes differently than other builders? Thank you.
Traditionally, with a bit of our volume going through, from a lumber perspective in particular, the TIS plant, we've
yep.
been able to buy in bulk and get some benefit from that, and also buy in advance.
Right. So
get some benefit.
The Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Midwest that are benefited by the plants, all of our plants are on rail lines. We're able to bring in rail cars of lumber, so we can buy out maybe 2, 3, 4 months because we have a lumber yard warehousing operation where we're able to do that. In the other markets, I think we have, even though our homes may take a little bit longer to build, you know, most of the added length is on the finish side, which is beyond lumber hitting the home. And I don't think we have a different situation than the other builders. We do our best to manage the lumber buying either by ourselves or by our framers. To buy out in advance as much as we possibly can. And if we can get out a month or two, you know, that would certainly be our goal. And that's what we strive for.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And our last question today will come from Alex Barron of Housing Research Center.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to ask, given the rising rate environment, whether you guys are thinking or actually shifting your price points or your size of homes or anything to make homes more affordable? That's my question number one. And my other question is if you can give us an update on how Vegas is doing for you.
Vegas.
Alex, with respect to the mix, we, as we've talked about, have, I think, the greatest variety and diversity of mix in the industry. So we're building the 2 million plus houses in places like California and the $300,000 homes in Boise and the $400,000 homes in Jacksonville, et cetera. So we have been shifting a bit to fill in the lower price point, and that has been naturally happening over the last couple of years. That is not driven by mortgage rates. In fact, remember that our clients have much higher credit ratings. They put more money down, and it's generally easier for them to get a mortgage because they're not tapped out when rates go up a little bit. So the strategy for us to be more diversified is, I think, just a smart strategy based upon the growth of this company, the geographic diversity of the company, and the demographic trends of more millennials buying homes, but is not being driven by the rate environment.
And we're seeing 25% of our buyers this quarter pay all cash, and that compares to a historical average of around 20%, which has trended up pretty steadily over the last three quarters. And we only see approximately 15 to 16% of our buyers take an adjustable rate mortgage. If affordability was an issue, that would go up instead of it having gone down around 5% in this most recent quarter.
And those that get a mortgage, the average LTV is 70%, so they're not, you know, maxing out their mortgage.
We have a very large component of our business in active adult housing. What is the average mortgage?
About half of those buyers pay cash.
Right.
And they are about 20% of our total. Second question concerned how the Vegas market is doing. The market feels pretty good. Our community count has declined in the most recent quarter.
Yeah, we started the year with 11 communities in Las Vegas. Right now we're at 9, and at year end we project to be at 10. But in terms of same store, business in Vegas is still very good.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And this concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Douglas Yearley for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. And have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and summer. Thank you.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.